busy, it's hard to actually get all these. Great if she were a keynote speaker at one vehicle for, in and of itself, is very participates in the support and stretch children's under. This is particularly the case in neurotypical who gutted participation with their in usually having to make it very explicit. Rogoff also says other and really working together involved than if they're doing it by themselves. Whose idea it was, because person A, Rogoff also says that guided part is my volume, and let me know if that works. Put a high volume, and feel free to let me know if that gets a little bit better. Oh, good. In fact, I'm seeing more green bars on my sound. Okay, thank you for letting me know. So I'll just go back to the beginning of this slide. That guided participation involves children and their caregivers and companions in the collaborative processes of building bridges from children's present understanding and skills. You can see scaffolding and the zone of proximal development there. And two, arranging and structuring children's participation in activities with dynamic shifts. There's that word dynamic, over development in children's responsibilities. So this is really looking at scaffolding quite well. And as we know, as RDI parents and consultants, we have to make these dynamic shifts in children's responsibilities very planned and very explicit. So each time we see them reaching the next stage in their responsibility, interpersonally, in an activity with us, we have to then release our scaffolding further so that they can take on more and more responsibility. Barbara Rogoff also talks about Vygotsky, as did many of the other authors on the hot list books. And he was a Russian psychologist who talked about how we develop higher mental processes within the context of social interactions. Incidentally, he died at age 38 of tuberculosis. So who knows what he would have said and done if he had lived longer. He was also very interested in special needs individuals, and he said that it's not just the disability, but how the disability cuts the child off from engagement in with more expert individuals in their culture, which is, of course, what we are bringing back the guided participation. So Barbara Rogoff says central to Vygotsky's theory is the idea that children's participation in cultural activities with the guidance of more skilled partners allows children to internalize the tools for thinking and for taking more mature approaches to problem solving that children have practiced in a social context. So there's this idea of internalizing the tools for thinking that we as parents and consultants often want to unveil our thought process so that the child can learn to think in more dynamic ways like we do. As we know, NT children often evoke this by asking why, what, where, when questions. And it's more difficult with kids on the spectrum, so we often have to kind of offer our unveiling of our thought processes. Vygotsky proposed that cognitive processes occur first on the social plane, and then these shared processes are internalized and transformed to form the individual plane. So again, this goes back to the idea that really complicated cognitive thinking does not develop in a vacuum or just a textbook. It develops with a more competent guide. Feel free to ask me questions and interrupt as I go if you have any questions. So Vygotsky also said that his greatest interest was in understanding higher mental processes, those that make use of cultural mediators to extend human thinking beyond the natural level characteristic of other animals or of involuntary mental processes in humans. So, as Dr. Gutstein has noted, we really want to emphasize this as many people on the spectrum have more primitive brains because of the lack of theory of mind and how guided participation kind of gets lost, they lose the chance to develop more higher mental processes that we want to make sure that they develop and we want to make. Barbara Rogoff also says that the infant's and child's strategies appear similar to anyone learning in an unfamiliar culture. You stay near the trusted guide. You watch the guide's activities and get involved in the activities when possible. And you attend to any instruction the guide provides. With neurotypical development, this happens naturally. NT children can hang out with a trusted guide, are really intent on watching the guide's activities and getting involved and attending to the instruction of the guide. And we have to make that very explicit for kids on the spectrum. And we have to really slow down the pace and minimize distractions and really just make things as simple and as clutter-free as possible to maximize the chance that the child will attend and that the individual will be able to be as competent as possible. Barbara Rogoff also says some things which dovetail nicely with the idea of slowing down the pace and the just noticeable difference variation within RDI. She says that children begin with involvement and skills supported in the close home environment. So the idea here is really what we take from it is slowing down the pace as much as we can. And Dr. Gutstein has said at one of our lunches in the training, just give me 1 year, just 1 year in the home, not in the school, just 1 year where the child is with a parent or two parents in a close home environment, really slowing down the pace. And then Barbara Rogoff also says that the inherent variability of particular historical and present circumstances, along with structured variation in cultural and biological resources and constraints produce inherent variation in human events and activities. And variability or variation is central to the process of development. So I really like this quote because it drives home the point of us adding just noticeable difference variation in our activities. And this adds cognitive complexity. It also allows our children to make dynamic shifts to stay in sync with us. And as Barbara Rogoff says, it is central to the process of development. Many people on the spectrum don't want that variation. They want things to remain static. And we want to add this just noticeable difference variation at appropriate points. By the way, this term, just noticeable difference, comes from the very beginning of psychology in the late 19th century with experimental psychologists who were doing studies. If, let's say, you put 5 ounces of a weight in a person's hand and you want to see what is the smallest amount that I can add, let's say an eighth of an ounce, to where the difference is just noticeable enough. And the subject says, okay, I noticed that. So this is the kind of variation we want to add in our activities because we don't want to overwhelm or overstimulate the individual, but we want to add slight changes that are natural within the activity that are just noticeably different. And that's where that term comes from, the beginning of experimental psychology. Again, with the idea of sharing our processes of thought, Barbara Rogoff says that in a study of the career development of prominent and creative thinkers, John Steiner in 1985 argued that development of a specific language of thought is fostered more by interacting with a knowledgeable person than by studying books or attending classes and exhibits. So apprenticeships provide the beginner with access to both the overt aspects of the skill and the more hidden processes of thought. So she gives a variety of examples with this. She studied and continues to study guided participation in South American cultures. And some of her examples in the book entail young girls and women learning how to make tortillas with their parents, and how basically the parent slowly releases their scaffolding to where the child and the young adult is taking on more and more responsibility with learning to make tortillas. And within that apprenticeship experience, other things are taught as well. The power of waiting and being patient and checking things as you go and testing things and a variety of other cognitive skills that we have. Barbara Rogoff also talks about, and she has great pictures in the book, and you could just learn so much from just skimming the book and looking at the pictures, is in South American cultures, like in Guatemala, the art of learning to weave, and how for several days the apprentice will just kind of, there's no speaking, will sit back and watch the expert weaver weave, and then they will shift positions, and the apprentice will begin to weave, and the guide will watch, and then the speech will begin, and the types of things that are learned through that kind of interaction. And I am that we can each think about things that we learn from our parents and from our teachers in terms of, different ways of thinking that that maybe the guide didn't even plan on teaching us. I remember in graduate school, my research advisor mentioned that he always, whenever he's asked to do anything, he always says, "Well, let me sleep on it," and to give himself 24 hours. And he didn't know how much that helped me in terms of my own decision making, but it was just through our process of going through my dissertation that he was talking about that. And I take that with me in my own choices as well. So that's a good example, I think, of how more expert guides can kind of share with us the more hidden processes of their own thinking and how we can do that with our own children. So an example may be if we're unloading groceries with our child, we take out the butter and we say, butter often needs to remain cold, thinking that that should, because the fridge is cold, that should probably go into the fridge. Now clearly we do all of that without thinking, but we want to break that down and share all those processes to our with our children. The concept of scaffolding, as I mentioned, is also discussed at length in the book. She doesn't really call it scaffolding, although other authors have called it that, including Vygotsky. But she says that caregivers build bridges that aid children in understanding how to act in new situations by providing emotional cues about the nature of the situations, nonverbal models of how to behave, verbal and nonverbal interpretations of behavior and events, and verbal labels that classify objects and events. As you can see, these are many explicit objectives that we work on in the RDI child stages. All these activities by caregivers are coupled with children's efforts, intentional or not, to pick up information through such means as social referencing and nonverbal and verbal cues about the nature of situations and about caregivers' interpretations of situations, as well as appropriate ways to handle them. So again, with the child objectives, we're making this process that happens implicitly in typical development very deliberate, thought out, and mindful. In terms of building bridges, Dr. Gutstein also talks about, and Rogoff is talking about it, building bridges in terms of scaffolding, but he also talks about building bridges from my mind to yours, and that's the idea of experience sharing communication, too. Again, this social referencing, which is in the Stage 1 Foundation Objective 539, which, as I've mentioned in my other webinar, is one of the key things we want to look at in the beginning of RDI in terms of the eye gaze. From the first year of life, children look to adults to interpret situations that are ambiguous from the children's point of view in a process called social referencing. It appears that with adult support, infants' use of social referencing may provide increasingly advanced means of gathering information about their caregivers' interpretation of new situations. So, as you can see, this social referencing is the building block for theory of mind, the idea of thinking about the caregiver's interpretation of new situations. If you aren't able to socially reference, you're going to have a difficult time thinking that other people have their own interpretations of situations. That will be difficult to think about the phenomenon that other people have their own minds. So I want to emphasize that the facial following eye gaze is just so very much important, and the ability to have the child learn to socially reference. We also have some ideas from Barbara Rogoff's work in terms of spotlighting. She says that the children's attention and skill with objects can be channeled by adults' highlighting of events during social interaction. So we know with RDI, we want to highlight or spotlight the relevant parts of the activity in terms of the objective, the episodic memory, maybe even spotlighting when we're about to add cognitive complexity. We want to spotlight the relevant points since our children have difficulties with dynamic appraisal, focusing on what's important based on the situation. So Rogoff says the active and supportive involvement of an adult in children's exploration of novel objects, and that's like scaffolding as well, led to more exploration by 3 to 7-year-olds than did the simple presence of the adults. Great point. She also talks about concepts that are similar to our concept of declarative language. Rogoff says, when teachers substitute non-controlling talk, such as commentary on their own ideas, and increase the amount of time allowed for students to respond, children are more active and equal participants. So back, when we substitute non-controlling talk, so when we're not doing imperative instrumental language, like, you know, pull up your pants, sharpen your pencil, and we're adding, you know, kind of more commentary on our own ideas, like the declarative language, and we're increasing the amount of time allowed for the child to respond, like the 45 seconds of wait time with minimal prompts, then the child becomes a more active and equal participant. That point is very important. I wanted to kind of end my planned presentation with just a discussion of what Barbara Rogoff is doing these days. I just Googled her and found what she's doing. I thought it was really interesting. You can see a picture of her and her graduate students collaborating, and a variety of other pictures of students collaborating and project-based learning. She is a professor of psychology at the University of Southern California in Santa Cruz. And her research group focuses on cultural variation in learning processes and settings with special interests in communities where schooling has not been prevalent. So she's looking at kind of implicit guided participation. And the emphasis is on studying cultural aspects of 1, collaboration, 2, learning through observation. Both of these we know spectrums struggle with. 3, children's interest and keen attention to ongoing events. We have to often evoke their interest and evoke their attention with kids on the spectrum. The roles of adults as guides or as instructors. And 5, children's opportunities to participate in cultural activities or in age-specific, child-focused settings. Her research group investigates the organization of teaching and learning processes in family settings and in schools. She and her graduate students are currently working with people varying in their extent of participation in schooling in several cultural communities, including middle-class European American and Indigenous Central and North American and Mexican heritage communities. We know in general that with a middle-class European American, the emphasis is focused on independence and the individual, and in South American cultures, the emphasis is placed more on interdependence and the cultural community. And she also is particularly interested in the idea that in indigenous communities of Central America and North America, children are supported in learning through keenly observing ongoing community events in anticipation of growing participation and collaborative group engagement. This is less emphasized in our culture. With increasing participation in Western schooling, however, the learning approaches of both Mayan and U.S. Mexican heritage participants resemble those more of middle-class U.S. European. So the more the emphasis is on Western schooling, the more emphasis is on independence and the individual, and less emphasis on interdependence and community collaboration. That's what she's currently doing, but I just found her book to be quite meaningful and quite worthwhile to read, to really kind of allow the points in RDI to sink in more, because a lot of the points are difficult to understand in the beginning. I think that's my last slide. No, I have one more. She says, we have also been studying the processes of teaching and learning in an innovative elementary school that prioritizes learning as a community. This is a public school committed to collaborative relations between adults and children, as well as among children. So children collaborating with adults and children collaborating with children. It organizes the curriculum around the interests of the children, teachers, and parent volunteers, which is somewhat similar to Montessori in terms of following the child. That's a summary of her current research. That is all that I have prepared. I wanted to open up the rest of our discussion to answer any of your questions, if you have any questions, and no pressure if you don't, but I'll just stay quiet for a while to see if you have any questions. Oh, okay, you have. What do you think of it? It's kind of dense. Yes, it is. I think many of them are hard to get through. It took me probably a good year to read maybe six of them. One of them, which I'm going to be summarizing next month, The Developing Mind, it took me about 3 months because it's just it's so dense and intellectual. But what I've found that if I just kind of read a couple pages per night, the really important points will just pop out at me, basically, and those are the ones that I highlight, because some of the points don't pertain to RDI specifically, but the ones that do are probably easy to detect, and they really have helped me understand and to when I work with families and when I work with my own child as well. So I really do think it's worth it, because sometimes whatever consultant you're working with, they may not describe all of the things in the way that Dr. Gutstein would describe, in the way that the original authors would describe. And so the more you're able to read about the same topics from different perspectives and different verbalizations and writings, the more they'll become your own. So it's definitely worth it. I'm in the middle of reading several books right now. Oh, which ones? All the Hot List books? Okay. Okay. I see you're typing. Yes. It's very interesting, but very intellectual. So you may, feel free to kind of to read it beforehand, but I also will be summarizing it extensively. I think it's the first Friday in March, excuse me, in May, which I think is May 1st. I'll be summarizing it then, and then the first Friday in June, I'll be summarizing the cradle of thought. And then last webinar, which I did March 13th, I summarized, let's see, the infant's world and awakening children's minds. And it helps me be more mindful. That is it. Wow, that's a great idea. It probably helps you be more mindful when you're cleaning, too. It makes the cleaning more worthwhile, right? Or kind of just more more mindful. Oh, thank you. Great. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm not real good with technology, so I'm glad I'm able to figure out the technology part of it. But I do agree with you that looking at these points over and over again really help kind of review the concepts in our mind and keep things fresh when we're working with our sons, because it, you know, it's a long, long journey and it requires a lot of planning and a lot of work, and it's easy to get kind of drained. And so I get more inspired when I review the concepts in these books. So feel okay. Oh, okay. Oh, great. Okay. Well, thanks so much for attending. And I look forward to seeing you on May 1st if you want to join that one. Take good care. Bye. I'll stop recording now. Have a good weekend. Thank you. Take care.